Is being willing to have this mean absolutely nothing a prerequisite for experiencing what it is?
That's funny. That's great.
I guess I say that because I can really find the impulse. I found a lot of consternation within myself over, oh my God, I have got to create a real social life. and it doesn't happen. Don't worry about that. But
why are you trying to enroll us in it?
I thought we were enrolled in it.
Well, I actually think that worry about it is because it's a reaction like, oh my God, I have to get people around me to make sure I am somebody. Like the Wilson thing.
Yeah, well, you could buy a bunch of soccer balls and paint faces on them.
That's not what I was thinking about.
That might do the trick. This way you'll have your validation, but you don't really have to talk to anybody.
I've spent my time in a mental hospital.
I think I've tried that in a manner of speaking.
You can put the lipstick on Fred, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, because you just end up hating yourself then, and then you're like, oh, shit.
Mm. Yeah.
That's the underlying issue.
Huh. Do you have to give this permission? Is there actual doing to kind of let it have you? Or to actually let go of the attraction of creating more of a story of
no.
who you are?
Yeah, no, you don't, yeah, there's no renunciations required. Hmm. I mean, that kind of goes in the face of the traditions that create monastic culture and then beg, borrow, and steal, you know, from people that are working to support the monastic culture. That's been, you know, a working model for a while in some cultures. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if there's nothing to renounce, nor is any kind of renunciation that might otherwise occur a prerequisite, then it gets a little closer in that way. And that way it's a little stranger and you could say a little more intimidating.
It actually doesn't feel like a renunciation that I'm doing. It feels like things are just swept off the table. Like, no. Nope, not going to happen.
You know, you can't find the party responsible for the whims and preferences that arise in you. Yeah. And the conditioning or the preference set that you seem or one seems to follow, whether it's, you know, food, clothing, sexual preference, dressing or cross-dressing. I mean, these are all just, right, miraculous accoutrements that we refer to you. We refer to as you because we can point to your so-called body and, right, discern it, identify it as a discrete object, give it a name. And we do that to ourselves, right? We say, my body. What does that mean? I mean, body is four letters. It's kind of shorthand for, right? An effervescing miracle mm-hmm. of sensation and, right, biologic and subcellular processes that are going on that you obviously have no control over, you're not even aware of, and yet the effusive nature of your consciousness is the mitochondrial and metabolic outcome of those processes, and yet you call it my body. They're calling you. They're calling you their bitch. You call it my body, but this force of nature is saying, "I got you." You know, I mean, how mistaken a sense of identity is that? Everything that's occurring as you, in you, around you, is clearly occurring, you know, miraculously, and none of it, or most of it, has asked for your opinion. The only one who's asking your opinion turns out to be the myth of your opinion. We were walking by the lake and, you know, our dear friend Dave was giving us a nice, you know, treatise on the ego, his ego or whomever's. And it was like, the ego can only do one thing, and that's discuss the ego. There is no ego. There's nothing there. And by virtue of its the so-called ego's self-reflection on what it takes itself to be, that's the ego. That's how it apparitionally appears. That's why you say my mind or my body or my choice, my decision, my spiritual path is such ludicrous heresy. But, you know, we take it and run with it.
Because we're desperate to have a mind, a mean.
You know, every explanation you find will be fun and instructive and insightful, but it won't be true. But that's okay. That doesn't mean to discourage it. Any explanation for this being the way that it is, fooling itself into being other than itself, is not true. It can't be true because this fooling itself that it's other than itself isn't really happening, and so it does not have a cause. See, this doesn't actually convey anything at all that you can take home or refrigerate or find an explanation for. I mean, it's dreaming that well. It's not like dreaming 70%. No, it's like 170%. It's dreaming well beyond, you know, full saturation of dreaming. That's how deeply and well it is dreaming. So anything that you might identify hypnotically and spiritually or secularly or philosophically is just this, blowing wind, making it appear as if you can compare one thing to another and come up with a complex set of meaning that has something to do with the likes of you. You are fucking being dreamed by biologic and subcellular urgencies over which you have no consciousness or control. Everything you think, everything you feel, everything you say, everything is completely effervescing, impersonally, spontaneously, from nowhere at all. It's that bad. Yeah, right. Down to the cell. Down to the marrow. Yeah. It's that bad.
That bad.
So if one has the, you know, you mentioned a little earlier, you know, is there a prerequisite? Does one have to be willing to? Let's just say if you don't have a certain kind of humor, self-humor or elasticity, it's going to be very difficult or challenging to see that your present presence is being, let's say, urgently appearing. Consciousness, discernment, preference is urgently appearing. It has nothing to do with you. If you don't have a certain humor or elasticity, that's going to fucking piss you off.
Or like, I want to apologize about it. I'm like, I really need to apologize. I'm like, dude, I would just spend my whole life apologizing for what an idiot I am.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
That's all I would be doing all day.
Yeah. I'm really sorry. Once again, I'm so sorry. I can't believe I just thought that.
Just forget about it.
Yeah, really. Just pay no attention to the woman behind the curtain. I am the great and powerful Oz. I mean, if you really want to get, like, spiritual about it, right, then you're in deep trouble because, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh is a flush. Everyone is a flush. Byron Katie's a flush. Peter Brown is a flush. You're a flush. Never to be heard or seen from again.
Disposable?
Yeah. But every moment is disposable. Disposed of. Everything is disposed of before you even get around to figuring out what it might be. It's long gone, way long gone before you even have an impulse to think about a thing. It's already disappeared.
It's the flushable, disposable type.
This is biodegradable.
I like it.
Cosmically degradable. Yeah, instantly cosmically degradable. Nothing happened a moment before now. Nothing is happening right now. And if you think something's going to happen in your future, then I'll sell you a bridge.
It won't be hard to fire
the bridge.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, it is a relief.
Otherwise, I would just kill myself.
Yeah.
If you were an intelligent person, if you were an intelligent and caring person, and you didn't have a little, let's call it, you know, spirituality under your belt, then, yeah, you'd be wise to kill yourself.
People do.
Yeah. Sure. Well, either open one or we'll just fling ourselves from it.
Are we really going there tonight? Come on. We got snacks.
You see, anyway, it doesn't
matter. I know.
I do it soon.
Any problem that you have, and that's not to refuse or discourage or discredit anyone's experience. And the excruciating problems that we have, the small ones, you know, and the big ones. It's just uncannily appearing. It may look as if it's uncannily appearing on a macro scale, like a global scale, like a species scale, like countries and continents, but it's not. The entire crisis of the entire thing is curiously happening just where you are.
It can either be depending on what I apparently appear to be believing in the moment.
Yeah, that's right. What you're believing, what's happening sensorially, what the associations that you're giving to your present so-called experience. I mean, this is dreaming really good. Now, this is it's a little strange, if not a lot strange, because most people that are, let's say, inspired to think of something that could possibly be called spiritual really want something to be true about something, about anything. They want something to be true about something, about anything, including themselves. So this way that they can claim, let's call it a spiritual experience maybe, where something actually occurred. To them. I mean, otherwise, why do you get an audience? The audience gets really thin if you, you know, take the risk to reflect upon how disposable this is. Then you can't justify your suffering, your remedies for that suffering, your urgency for healing, for, you know, ongoing validation, for relevancy. Your whole arc of seeking and finding, whether it's physical or psychiatric or, you know, samadhi-driven, becomes an absolute instantaneous ruse. Because you can't become anything. You're not anything now. You're not anything now. You can't become anything, ever, let alone better. If you take that away, that one simple presumption away, you can't become anything, certainly not better. We just lay that down. Then where are you going? What is anyone going to do for you? Including, you know, Ramana Maharshi. Or any living teacher, even the good ones. I'm not going to do anything for you. I mean, you read certain biographies. Oh, I had to have a spiritual awakening. I was really dedicated to it. I took time off so it could happen. I discovered the teachings of so-and-so. I had my spiritual awakening. So-and-so coached me on how I could be a more effective non-dual presenter. And that's me. That's my biography. Now give me money, and I will change your life. Ka-ching. And you're like, excuse me, what happened? Just a second. What happened? Right? What is it you have now? Oh, joy, peace of mind, ease of being, you know, fearlessness, abundance, really wonderful experiences to my body and my mind and my soul and my car. Oh, what happened? Excuse me? You see? You have to place so much confidence on yourself as an object to be committed to do something about yourself for whatever reason it is. Vanity, spirituality, and those turn out to be the same. But that's okay, because, you know, vanity and spirituality are things that are, let's say, more despicable in the human nature, again, are all arising, right, curiously, improvisationally, according to, you know, DNA or RNA or biomarkers or karma or morphic resonances or subtler than that, that you just will never be able to find. We don't know why we are the way we are in the way that we are, or the way that, or why what we call consciousness lends itself to suffering objects. We just don't know. Norio didn't know.
It's just some really fucked up shit.
It's just some fucked up shit. I had a revelation from the Lord after I stopped thinking while driving my truck, and the Lord said, pretty fucked up shit, man. And that's all I got. I can't tell you why there's thought and feeling and separation and, you know, Pebble Hill Church. It's just some fucked up shit.
It's like with my little nephew with the cancer thing. It's like, that's all that you can say that makes any sense. It's like allowable. People are like, yeah, it's like, that's cool. Like, dude, it's just fucked up. You know, I mean, it's just like, it's not sensical. You can't.
That's right.
You can't make any, really put anything logical together. It's just not going to happen.
We bring an imaginary context to, let's say, a conversation or a, you know, spiritual discovery. Were there such a thing? Thank God there's not. We bring content and context along for the ride, which reflects the things that we've read, the experiences we have, the urgency that we feel, the pluses and the minuses, the attractions and the aversions that appear to frame us, right, as someone in search of. The moment you're someone in search of, you're fucking dreaming. You're just a poser. That's hell-bent on a remedy. For what? You don't know.
No, you don't know. I don't know. Yeah, but everything has to change.
Yeah, that doesn't. Yeah, that doesn't interfere with that insistence. Yeah, that's cool. But everything has to change. Absolutely, it had better.
No, I'm kidding. That's what I like that.
Yeah.
It's just like this bizarre sense of like something's just not quite right.
Thank God for that.
The game. Always something not quite right.
So we self-assess and we figure out what's wrong with us and why it is that what's wrong with us is wrong with us, and you know who or what circumstances to hold to make accountable, hold accountable for why we are the way that we are. Yeah, and then you know a bunch of gurus come along and suggest, well, we should do metta or forgiveness or healing or, you know, PTSD or LSD or microdose psilocybin and, you know, do all these things just to take the edge off just how fucked up we are. And, yeah, there's no quarrel with that. Do anything and everything twice or three times to, you know, mitigate yourself. But all that you're mitigating is an idea. You're just going to end up back. Yeah. I mean, you might have more stories to tell.
How do people keep those balls in the air indefinitely? There's a lot of people that will never give up on the balls in the air of that mitigation thing. Never.
Most of the species apparently functions that way. But, I mean, it's a bold statement. I mean, how many people have I met? You know, what do I know about most of the species? It could be that the most shameful dumb fucks in the universe are right here in Doylestown, and we're doing the best we can. But everyone else is as happy as could be. We wouldn't know. It doesn't look that way, but we don't know. You know, we could be on the set of the Truman Show. And this is it. And in a sense, everyone's on the set of the Truman Show. Everyone is in a, you know, their own biopic.
Yeah.
What do we know about anything?
Well, we don't know. I mean, this is just bizarrely popping into my head, but the variations on, like, something like sight, like, across people, like, you can never catalog anything like that. It's not, you know, like, we could be like, oh, maybe, like, a fly sees different than a human or something.
Yeah.
But you don't know from fly to fly. I mean, there's so many bizarre variations. Right, like, just kind of fun. You're like, I don't know, and you can't validate, like, just through words, you're, like, trying to describe. This is, like...
I've seen horses paint. Better than me.
Well, that brings me out.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, in a sense, you're better off destroying the myth of finding than encouraging that there could be something to be found. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to be found. So you what's that called? Buck up. You buck up and you look clearly and innocently with some fervor at the myth of you're being in a condition and of a certain nature, finding yourself insufficient in a thousand ways, and then go a finding. I love to go a finding because I am so sad. Really can't stand myself.
I guess that's kind of the same as wanting to apologize all the time for yourself.
Yeah, of course it is. Sort of that's right. So sorry that we met this way. I'm really kind of shy. I don't believe anything I say. I'm just a fucked up guy. Yeah. No, that's good. That one's a hit. And derailing the myth of being something in the first place and then derailing the impulse to go find. That's some wild shit.
Who the hell are you? You don't have that impulse and that activity and that.
That's the question.
Effort.
That's the question. And we're not emphasizing or insisting on that so-called process as a way to anything, or that you're better off doing that as contrasted with something else. You're not.
I'm like a way to nothing.
Yeah, you're just not. This is a creative, right, and bottomless effulgence. So to deny it, whether Buddhistically or in some other fashion, to deny it seems kind of like a tragedy. Why would you deny that which is just, effusively appearing as an ongoing miracle? That would be silly. I mean, it is the stuff of life. It is the stuff of consciousness. It is the stuff of one's vitality, of one's self-love, that transcend circumstances and events. This effulgent and effusive miracle of, right, sensorial and supersensorial experiencing is the shit. It's the only game in town. So that it would be foolish to deny it or refute it.
And then you just go back to when you kill yourself.
Yes, you could.
End of the spectrum.
You sure could. So without denial, without refusal, without belittling anything, you check out the evidence that you think that you found for what it is, for who it is, are the accusations that you have made about yourself, which become the motives which we think are personal and deliberate to do something about ourselves, spiritually or in any other way. To do something about ourselves, to do something about our condition, our consciousness, its fullness or its dearth. So in the midst of a, oh my God, this is an ongoing evaporative, right, miracle field of no end of nuance. And you say the habit of feeling insufficient somehow is kind of a buzzkill. And then once we feel insufficient, right, within the generous embrace of a speechless and bottomless miracle, we have to create boundaries around ourselves, like my body and my mind and my feelings and my past, my sentiments, my needs, my validation, my fulfillment. And once we've invested just a drop, just like, an LSD's dose worth of interest, you're toast. Because you live then. There's no crime and no shame. One lives then fabricatingly. The nature of your experience is felt always secondhand. Because one is living through the filter of mind.
That secondhand thing is what, that's what kind of drives the looking. We have a sense we're secondhand. We don't like it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
We know there's something other than secondhand.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you've ever tasted it, it's like, yeah. No seconds.
Yeah. So So that instinct arises, the disquietude with living secondhand through a fog, a mental fog of self. Yeah, so we're wise then to figure out how to apply ourselves so that we can emancipate from the mental fog of self.
Yeah, you're like, oh, that can never happen again. That was terrible. Just can't happen again.
The clusterfuck.
You have to really make sure that just never happens again.
The clusterfuck of self. Yeah. But then you discover after you've spent tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions or more dollars, if you have them, that you cannot meaningfully remedy the clusterfuck of self by attaining to experiences, by pursuing and acquiring. You're better off if you don't have that much money, maybe, because then, you know, you've exhausted the power to purchase more quickly, so you have to rely on your own.
Or you just live in, well, if I just had the money to do this and that, then I'd get it. I mean, there's...
That's right.
You can play both sides of that.
Or you create a huge amount of debt for as long as you can get away with it. We know all kinds, don't we?
Yeah.
We don't know what to do with not self. We don't trust it. We might crave it, but we have a hard time trusting it. We don't know what to do with ourselves if we're not in the game. if we're not commanding or suffering from the tension of having to make decisions about what to do next, about everything. Yeah. So we might crave what we think is some form of, you know, cessation or peace of mind. But if it were actually to appear and you were invited to feel the consequences of it, you might change your mind. Everyone thinks they want, you know, to be enlightened or something or other because they have some ideas about what it's going to do for them or what it's going to take away from them. They have ideas about, oh yeah, I will live happily or more this or less that or more this or less that should, you know, my enlightenment ship come in. But once you actually start getting a palpable taste, a living encounter with not self, the implications of it can be very disturbing. You might change your mind.
And by that time, it's too late.
For you, luckily for you, by that time it's too late. Because you can run, but you sure can't.
It's like the saboteur on the Matrix. Matrix 1. He doesn't buy into it anymore. He wants the red pill.
He wants to go back and eat steak. I remember that. He wanted to eat steak. It's like, you rock. You go. One might say, well, is it like this? Is it like that? Is it like this or that? Is it like that? Is it like this? Tell me what it's like. What's like? See, all the qualifiers that we might bring to spiritual inquiry, it has to have some kind of meaning for us. It has to be like a thing or not like a thing. It has to bring a thing or take a thing away. Oh, you sleep better? Yeah, I sleep better. I make better choices when I eat. Right? Do you have, like, ecstatic encounters with nothing at all? Oh, yeah. They come and go like butter.
Do you still dream?
Yeah, still dream. But I know that I'm dreaming. I know that I'm dreaming that I'm dreaming that I know that I'm dreaming. So deeply that I'm dreaming.
But what we really want to know
is... only three iterations. I don't know.
No, that's not enough. If the holodeck's not six down, you're not enlightened yet, right? You see what happens here? What, the only thing that mind can do is just push or suggest qualifiers. It's just a rush of qualifiers. And the qualifiers and the words are shorthand implications for the tension of the opposites, which is a sea of qualifiers that are showing up. So the self or the ego, or whatever those are, and they're nothing at all, are just, it's an impression field of qualifiers, random meaning assigned. And that's how you place yourself in space-time, through the random apprehension of qualifiers. That's how boundary fields are created, imaginary boundary fields are created. Well, you name it. Anything. Any character. Any quality.
Any reference.
Like, any reference. Like make any preference.
Computer program where, yeah, you start doing like X plus whatever equals Y, and then...
Yeah, as soon as you've got an X.
Whatever.
Your entire mind, or we'll call it thought, is really just a stream of qualifiers. Yeah, look at it. Whatever you're going to think about, whatever you might think about, you know, oh, I have an itch, right? you know, I like the seaweed in those chips, right?
I think it's a plot to get me to like seaweed.
It's totally a plot.
Right.
All about me.
All about me.
It turns out to be. So that's what mind is. That's what storytelling is. That's what living secondhand is, behind the scrim of self. Yeah. We're dwelling in an ocean of qualifiers that we imagine have palpable implication. Right? Corporeal, evidentiary implication. And that's reality.
Mostly just trying to get through something so you can get to the next thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Where are you going?
I mean, 6-11 is really beautiful, but I mean, it's the Moo Burger that, you know, that this is all about. Right? Now you might notice, and it would be, well, we could say useful to become infuriated and exhausted with this magical apparatus that just dreams qualifiers in your face. Faster.
And I'm not going to take it anymore.
If you aren't willing to get mad as hell and not take it anymore, then in a sense you've acquiesced, signed up, become a co-conspirator with the stream of qualifiers.
Well, sometimes the mad as hell and not take it anymore comes out like depression.
Oh, it can take so many forms.
A lot of tantrums and other.
Yeah.
Could be, I'm sad as hell. I'm not gonna.
Yeah, I'm sad as hell. I'm not getting out of bed.
Yeah. Mm. Yes, it is capable of being worn by every weird possible combination of emotivity and sentimentality and inspiration.
To roll you even more in the samsara dream.
It can do both. It can enroll you.
Yeah.
It can spit you free.
Right.
Yeah.
If you are one of those ones that works.
Yeah, and we're not talking about what it might appear to be some kind of preferential strategy. We're just riffing on how weird consciousness is, mm-hmm. and the games, or you know, the entertainments that it plays.
Well, and you can think of that in so many different ways. Like you could think, "I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore." As in, like you're so done with yourself as a person, as that whole game.
Yeah.
You're just done with the whole game.
Yep.
Which is very different than putting that in the game, that statement in there.
Yeah. Well, that's when you go, if you're doing it in the game, then it's like, that's when you get the
shotgun and go into the post office and just.
Yeah, that's game's
turn. Yeah, Mrs. Plum with the candlestick in the laboratory.
I don't know that.
Clue.
Oh.
You never played Clue?
Oh, I hated those games.
Colonel Mustard.
I did play it when
Colonel Mustard with the wrench.
Jeez, I didn't play it when I was old enough to.
In the Evergreen Garden.
Have a choice.
I know.
No.
Which one of these is not like the other?
Definitely not.
So, do people, I mean, it, okay.
Let's ask them.
This doesn't riff well. I mean, it does here.
You always start with do people.
It doesn't, it, I mean.
To those people.
I don't know what you mean.
I don't find that.
Give it another try.
I don't hear this message too much.
What message? Nobody wants to talk about this. Nobody wants to peer through.
That's right.
Nobody wants to peer through the friable nature of their own useless consciousness.
So is it? Am I not? Do I not hear? Have the ears to listen, or is the message being so transmogrified?
Uh-huh.
Look like you have ears from here. So.
But here's the ear. The mon message. I mean, you know, it's like. Are we just coming into the age of Aquarius where we can appreciate it? What's the deal?
The deal is that this
what's
just keeps
deal?
Making it look like something's going to happen, but nothing ever
tell me what's happening. What's that song?
And it
tell
just keeps doing happening. It over.
Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ, Superstar.
Why would you want to know? Yeah. You think that is...
There you go. Do it. Have a cookie and sing the whole song.
Oh, jeez, that's going to be on my mind.
Here we go. We lit that up. Day by day. Day by day. Oh, dear Lord. Three things I pray. I want to see the cast of Saturday Night Live do Jesus Christ Superstar. I don't know, Jamie. I wish I had an answer to whatever question you thought you were asking. Yes, it is the age of Aquarius. Age of Aquarius.
Age of Aquarius.
Aquarius.
That went far. That really uplifted the culture.
Better than
I think Superfly was better than that. He's a bad mother. Shut your mouth. Yeah. What do you guys do at your spiritual group? We do like charades for like 70s hits. Cha-cha. Superfly.
What was the theme tonight? I don't get that anymore.
Someone ran out of theme questions.
Same thing.
It's always the same theme. None that we could find.
What was that? Let it out, Jeff. You can tell us. Something profound just got swallowed.
Hardly. You strip away the confidence that you mistakenly have in the first place that says you're in a condition, something is insufficient about that condition, and you'd like to figure out how to get into a better condition. That's the yoga. rather than aiding and abetting your horrible personality to work shit out. You know? Oh yeah, give the world the work. That'll help. Right. Mindfulness. Well, practice mindfulness. My beautiful nose. My beautiful nose. Oh, beautiful air. My beautiful air. I chew 30 times. That's really gone a long way. Maybe I could do my mantra.
Well, make sure you do the mudra with it.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, that somebody on Facebook, the mantra is fuck this, fuck this, fuck this. Somehow that wouldn't work for me either.
The loop that we're in, you know, is about, right, planning and time. We're dreaming forward or we're dreaming back, and our present is occupied by dreaming forward and dreaming back, right? We don't become sufficiently dumbfounded with the so-called present because we're busy dreaming forward and dreaming back, and that takes up the presence of the present, dreaming forward and dreaming back, which is cascading, right, metaphors and cascading implications. And this incredible flow of, you know, word and subword conjures a universe that you think you're in.
It just seems like it can color whatever we would normally want to call the present, the present moment. It's colored by all of this jazz.
It's a jazz fest.
It's a jazz fest. So it's not really abiding in the moment or the not present.
Well, see, yeah, I mean, that abiding gets very strange, but that's, again, another sweet iteration of the yoga, right? What would abiding look like or feel like were it to be contrasted with daydreaming? One could say, without being, you know, cruel or mistaken, well, you're abiding in daydreaming is great. Right?
So what's the problem?
Yeah, abiding in daydreaming is swell.
Well, that's like the guy in the Matrix. I mean, really, the Matrix thing was that he didn't see the difference. What does it matter if it feels like you're eating steak? Yeah. Who cares if you have a body that's doing something somewhere? Right. You know? Yeah. Who gives a shit? There's no difference.
That's... I mean, where do you go if you...
But, I mean, abiding in something of anything, you know, isn't... To me, that's not... That cheapens the abiding. The abiding, I think of, is...
Right.
Abiding, you know.
Well, that's... Plain. That's worth... It's worth feeling your way there, not simply having a... Right. It's not a destination, so you feel your way there. Now, someone... If there were someone that were... drowning in daydream of self and happy to be drowning in the daydream of self and deal with the routine vicissitudes and frustration, you know, they're not interested in abiding. I mean, they may do a lot of exercise or drink scotch whiskey or whatever they do to get their fair share of abiding, whether it's runner's high, you know, or March Madness. When looking at abiding from the lens that we're looking at it, it's a kind of a different animal. And abiding itself has to be a myth because it implies the abider.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. Right. The abider, abiding in, we usually say. Abiding in what exactly? Right. So once attention, which is nothing at all, finds an object, chances for abiding have just gotten really slim. Because now attention is inebriated with the discovery of objects. And it tries them all on. You could say that attention is truly what do you call that when you're sexually, you're multiphasic?
Multi-orgasmic?
Relax.
Relax. Relax. Like Will Smith's son.
Sorry.
Right? Will Smith's son.
I like the opposite.
Well, his
that's the same.
He's not just doing androgyny. I think he's he's inhabiting himself kind of in the full range of, you know, possible, you know, call it sexual, right?
Nothing. I don't know what you're talking about.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
I don't remember. I'll get there. Consciousness will try on anybody's clothes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Are you a cross-dresser? Is that what you're saying?
But it's not cross-dressing. It's...
Yeah.
You're happy, and it's not androgyny. You're happy to fully express as male or fully express as female.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. Yeah. Kind of like David Bowie or something.
That's cool. You've seen the pictures of John Malkovich that, I forget what the famous photographer's name is. And he's doing all these classic poses of all these people, like the woman in the Depression, you know, who's there with her kids and she's there, you know, how is she like this, you know?
Yes.
It's a famous picture. He does that. I mean, it's remarkable. Hmm. I mean, he really captures
it. Take it on.
Malkovich.
Malkovich. John Malkovich.
Well, he's,
I mean, he does all these things.
Yes.
Him and the photographer just...
So he's portraying men and women in this, right? That's what you're saying, And he does it beautifully.
I'm sure you can find it, yeah.
Yeah, I think I've seen him,
I'm sorry, I don't...
Don't apologize. We know who you are. Consciousness will try on anybody's clothes, and it does so nonstop. So we were talking about abiding. And... the slightest hint of attention, right? Your presence, your attention, suggests a kind of a vector. It gives you a sense of directionality. And the flow of what we call time is kind of like, right, traveling through. We're traveling through. Attention is traveling through. What exactly, right? Well, spatial realms, right, and imaginary or psychiatric realms. It's traveling through realms. Attention is traveling through realms. So what we call the physical universe is not a physical universe. It's not a secularly existing universe because everything is made of quark fucks that don't have any centrism, no discernible centrism. Even photonic energy has nothing to show for itself. So consciousness is trying on everyone's clothes and dreaming up a storm of cascading implication, traveling through realms. You're actually traveling through realms. Your present experience is just, you haven't even arrived in a realm. Subtly, you're still traveling through realms, which looks like or could be interpreted as psychological or geophysical time or spatial orientation. But that's not what's actually happening. No one can say what's actually happening.
I mean, and I'm just poking around. But I would correlate living, just life.
Yeah.
You know, the life energy.
Sure.
With time, sequence, attention, all that jazz.
Yes.
And it would seem that that's part and parcel of that whole deal. So, you know, the only way to escape it, if you will, if there is such a thing, is not to be alive.
Well, yes, some so-called ardent spiritual seekers reach that conclusion in a, call it, material or bodily way. Yeah, they cease being alive, thinking that alive is the culprit. But it's not. Check it out. check it out, here it is. I mean, that's the principal mystery. We're looking at this cascading wave of traveling through realms and seeing, as you could say, lightheartedly, right, as relaxed, as undefended as possible, oh, what it feels like to travel through realms, which is dictated by or as your present experience. What you're thinking, what you're feeling, what you know. And what you might do next or not. Now, if that were felt as, let's say, an impossibility or an impossibility of obscuration, then, yeah, you might be forced to take your life to really give it, you know, the best remedy that you could. It's a little extreme, but I hear you. So there's, let's hope for fun and profit that there's another way.
Well, I would hope before that happens, I would try an immersion tank. You know?
Yeah. You would do a few other
we'll help support for that.
Jason. Non-lethal.
At that point, let us know.
Right. Take some peyote and then go on an immersion.
Yeah. Non-lethal exercises to see if you could get some mileage from them before you kill yourself. Yeah.
All right. Thanks. I'm talking you out of it. Jeez, that was close.
That was close.
Yeah. You had too much of the energy.
Yeah, I was starting to eye your Honda.
Actually,
I was starting to eye your Honda.
Fresh fire.
It's limping. It's a fresh little teeny tiny.
Wow. Get them when they're vulnerable.
Not that one, but.
So, what is abiding if there's no abider and no place or realm to abide in?
Yes.
See how quickly the slightest hint of, let's say, interest or possibility gets swarmed, right, by implication, by realm. You're feeling yourself and you can't stop, right? You're involuntarily, and not by virtue of birth. That's why killing yourself doesn't work. You see? If you think that you are involuntarily streaming as the apparency of consciousness by virtue of birth, then just to get out from under the influence of it, you might, you know, hope to kill yourself. If you find out on the other end of the absence of your corporeal existence that you're still streaming,
you know, used up a perfectly good body.
Yeah, I mean that could be a bummer, but we'd never find out unless we go to that, what is that thing that they have over there once in a while. The New Hope Metaphysical Society, right? We get some Chandler to tell us, like, what the fuck, dude? What happens, man? Like, if you kill yourself, like, to get out from under the misery of, like, that the shit goes down, and like you, but you don't really die?
Yeah, they never fail. I tell you what, every month, it's like, are you kidding me? You know what I mean? I'm compelled enough to read who's coming, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Every time.
They don't have the nerve to call it the Are You Kidding Me Club.
It's been a long time, but I was at several, maybe three or four.
Yeah. This month, the Are You Kidding Me Club presents... David Yingling, channeling George Harrison, playing two flutes at the same time, so that you can have ascension with dolphins.
And ascended masters.
That will present you with a gilded copy of the Course in Miracles. So what is abiding? What's the nature of abiding, like, as in presently? And if we are perturbed by the nuisance of ourselves, what would we hope abiding would be if it could somehow be mitigating, healing, or a salve of some kind? You can never get out from under yourself. You can never get out from under yourself. You can't survive in the same way that you know yourself. You can't survive or be the enjoyer of the absence of yourself. Something weird has to peek through. Something strange, which you could say clarifies the mind from feeling itself as the consequence of realms, or the inhabitor of realms. Some would say that, you know, demands a certain kind of intimacy or urgency. Right? You have to be like, what does present mean? Fuck, like right about here, like right about now, like right about here, like right about now, like right about here, like right about now. Right? Without delay. Ouch. Without delay. Without feeling this through the lens of a story. Wow, what is it like to just feel this, not through the lens of a story, not riding a surfboard of time?
Yet, we do that every night, seeming, from what I can gather. Although
yeah.
It's happening less and less, there is this deep sleep, and I have no good memory. But it seems as though you sure know when you're missing it. I've been missing it for some reason. But there's not this banner of stuff going on with your sleep. And in fact, the way I go to sleep, and I've said this and people think I'm crazy, I do my little mantra, no thoughts, no thoughts, no thoughts, no thoughts. And honestly, it works better than any mantra I've ever done for anything.
Nice.
I honestly, it works. I mean, I can try something else, but this is directly to the point. Don't think, you know, no thoughts, no thoughts. And a good percentage of the time, I'm like, hey, that worked. I mean, not right then, but the next 4 minutes.
Yeah. Well
and,
done.
Yeah, you know, so it's like, so in other words, when that happens, where all of this swimming stuff, which is kind of cool when that happens, just sort of swimming up and then it just...
Yeah.
You know?
See, we were talking about now.
And then you
went off to someplace else.
Okay.
Yeah. Well done.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I got a star.
Yeah, two. Take a fistful.
But...
Yeah, there's no but.
It's going to sleep, but not.
No.
Not
that,
closing your eyes.
Well, it's hard to say. You can't qualify. That's why this intimacy is so slippery, because we qualify it and therefore avoid it, or we drift into, you know, a nice right story or metaphor of some kind, and we avoid it.
We need to find out what it's not.
No, see, that creates something. By saying what it's not also creates something that it appears to be. You slip out of... See, your nature is wonder. Objectless wonder.
Yeah.
Objectless wonder is this. Here. Sensate. Just felt. That's objectless wonder, just this. That's the yoga. By sensing object less wonder, in the best way you know how, you could say, you become familiar with yourself as objectless wonder, which suggests that you can return to it, not be intimidated by it, or find some way to justify it away. You actually can become sufficiently familiar and affectionate with yourself in objectless wonder. One would argue, based on the yogic experience of many, that either spontaneously or in a gradual way, like Stephen Levine wrote about, gradual awakening, objectless wonder starts to run the show. Let's just say more consciously, more agreeably. But objectless wonder can also render the imagination of your life kind of moot.
I'm sorry, render what?
The myth of your life as moot. And not that many spiritual seekers who pride themselves on whatever it is they pride themselves on are quite in alignment with having the myth of their lives be rendered moot, as in moot. Yeah. See, we want something from this.
I want a little Boy Scout badge or something.
I want a badge. I want an iron-on patch. Yeah, right.
Patch.
I want to be able to tell people on the internet that that they would be wise to talk to me for a fee.
For a fee.
Right.
Anybody appreciates something as if you pay for it.
Yeah, I get it. Okay. I feel the same way.
I'm sure appreciating this cookie, and I didn't pay for it.
Mm. Well done. That's a win.
They're all good.
You withdraw from objects even though they don't cease appearing. You withdraw from the insistence that one has on the next thought, the next implication, the next utility, the next opinion, the next appointment. And it's even kind of misleading to say one withdraws, because if it were just withdrawal, it wouldn't have that much pull. You could say the reason it occurs is because bliss is a magnet. You withdraw from objects because you discover objectless wonder is the shit.
Objects suck.
And so you're drawn to simplicity, not through rejection, or not through withdrawal, but from interest. That's right. Withdrawal and stuff like that won't go very far. Just ask any monk who's pissed off, or none who will never admit to it. There's a lot of nice monks and nuns too, very happy people.
That was a nice statement.
It was. I take it back.
Oh, the barbecue sauce, the right sauteing.
I am ready. I'm ready for a barbecue and a fire. It's still March, kind of rushing it.
No, I don't think so. It's 70.
That's right.
It's like,
That's right.
This is spring.
Just don't know what to expect from our day in the systems.
We just don't know what to expect like we used to. We just can't expect shit the same way that we used to.
Who's been messing with the world?
We need to make America predictable.
That's right. That's why everyone should be vaccinated. By wanting a certain thing to happen, you know, like enlightenment or something like that, you're safe. Keeps you in the game. This way you've got a really clever inventory of everything you've experienced up till now. The good ones, the bad ones, the spiritual ones, and the ones you can ignore. And how those fall into context for your lofty idea of what something like enlightenment should feel like or be, turn out to be. So that keeps you in the game. Which means you're enjoying a sense or the myth of continuity of self, because you're in the game. You're not surrendering to objectless wonder. Like Zhou Chen. Someone yells, "Hey!" in the middle of the conversation. Something like it.
Or a mass murder.
Or that.
Like a shooting.
Yeah, that's right.
That'll mix it up.
Yeah, that'll mix it up.
You should do that bit, Beth, you know? Said, like, you know how Peter does his bit, that could be your bit. Yeah, like, watch this. Just take out a gun and shoot a couple people, be like, nah, that fucking set you straight.
Boop, boop, boop. Now that
how
was,
you feel now?
That was the spiritual seminar right there.
So violent.
You have to figure out what else it is. What else it is you. It's getting a lot of mileage. See, it's getting a lot of mileage.
Sorry.
It's quite alright. I couldn't do better myself. You have to figure out a new way to, let's say, feel about the way that you think and think about the way that you feel. You need a new vocabulary. A new experiential vocabulary. Not necessarily, you know, verbiage. You need a new experiential vocabulary. What? Nothing.
The laughing at the idea of fiction in my imagination. That's like a Peter Brown skit, and then being like, so how do you feel now?
Menopause, run amok.
Is anybody too cold?
No, that's pretty warm.
See, if you take yourself on the yellow brick road heading to Oz, so you could get a spiritual diploma, you're just going to end up with a witch. You're just going to have a witch up your ass.
You should have paid attention to the surrender, Darcy.
Yeah. That's okay. She had a big win. She ended up back in Kansas.
Yeah. Lucky gal.
Lucky gal. And you were there, and you were there, and you were there.
Kansas is...
There's no place like home.
That's dreamy.
Dorothy, we were having more fun when you were in Oz. Kansas just does not feel all that welcoming when you think about it. Yeah, you have to be willing to leave Kansas and not go back. Then you have to be willing to leave Oz and not go back. You always have to be willing to leave where it is you think you are and where it is you think you came from. Like, all the time.
That's like the constant submitting in some way. It's just like, don't go alpha.
Well, I mean,
don't worry about that, Glenn.
Pretty soon the pattern recognition seems to come in. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm getting caught up with this again. So it's different. But.
Yes. I mean, you know, clearly we're creatures of comfort and habit and routine. You know, we organize more or less where our clothes are if we're keeping up with the laundry. You know, where do we keep our keys? Where do we put the mail when we bring it in from the mailbox? You know, all these fun little routines that keep us moving steadily forward. But you can see the hysteria of you is the presently appearing insistence on familiarity. You create the imagination of your life through familiarity.
Referential familiarity.
That's right. That's how you create the myth of the continuity of your life and your past, is through referential familiarity. You trust what it is that you remember. You trust what it is that you believe. You trust what it is that happened or what's happening now. And yet you can never find what happened, and you cannot find what's happening now, because you are actually made of objectless wonder, and everything else turns out to be bullshit. Sell that.
I buy the wonder part.
Yeah, you have to be willing to admit to yourself.
that you are a hoax.
Total hoax.
You have to be willing to admit that you are a total hoax.
Be readily.
Yeah, that's right. This way, then, you know, as you get a feel for it, you're not from around here. You're never from around here. Too dark for you?
Well, I generally like the dark stuff.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, they are.
They would go really nice on top of that cookie.
Yeah, or in the middle of a ginger lemon cream.
God, ginger
lemon
cream.
That would probably be really good. You should do that. In the middle of one of those cookies.
Melted in some hot chocolate.
I like the light.
We try to say serious stuff, but we're always derailed by snacks.
Who does that?
It's so slippery. You try to, like, you know, come up with some, like, real hard-hitting, liberated stuff, and it's like, cookie, chips, seaweed,
banana?
Dark chocolate. That's the way this rolls. Near what's his name's Siddha Rameshwar's instructions to Nirsagadatta were fairly simple. Right. Awareness takes up residence with awareness. Very simple. And Nirsagadatta, according to him anyway, was capable of doing it with sufficient fervor or ease or commitment that he would sit in a room alone or whatever and just do that. He would just chill out in himself. And, you know, he said it wasn't long thereafter that his realization occurred. He went to the end of the hoax.
But he could still talk, still communicate.
And smoke beans.
Yeah, why not?
Is there something, what do they call it, eternal rules or something? You know how people say sometimes there's a universal law?
Yeah.
Is there some universal law about the bigger the hoax, the better? Is that actually, I mean, it seems to be
the harder the
possibly correct. You know, this is the biggest hoax.
Ah, yes.
We're talking about the biggest hoax.
Right.
But, I mean, there are other things that are, you know, people.
Other things?
Other kind of
what, smaller hoaxes?
In the human storyline, yeah.
Well, yeah.
The bigger the hoax is, better, like the World Trade Center. You know, it's like, let's do this. Yeah.
Well done, yeah, that's right. Yeah, the bolder, right, the bolder or the more audacity that the hoax perpetrates, the harder it is to see through it.
Maybe that's why Trump's singing.
Yes. Yeah, you somehow you discover the texture and the nuance and the rhythm of the hoax. And curiously, no one can say how or why or what your chances are. This is too strange. You figure out how to rest in exactly what this is and not be hoaxed, not be hosed.
You put on your hoax proof suit.
You put on your hoax proof suit and you zip it up. And that's a, what would you call that? That's a feeling, I think. That's an orientation. But it's not no longer an orientation of objects. You're really piercing the veil of conformist reality and the mirage that reality has actually created something, that you're living in a realm punctuated by space-time as a body. You've pierced that. You've really pierced it. But you can't say how or why. It's just like, right? Presence knows better. Presence knows better. Your presence. You are objectless wonder. So you just discover that, oh fuck, yeah. I know better. And now call it the rhythmic perturbances, the rhythmic perturbations of consciousness masquerading as self are not binding. I must have read that somewhere.
Did you do the memorization just before coming in?
Yeah, I do all this stuff through memorization.
Mm-hmm. Quick notes all prepared.
Yeah. I like to quote, famous gurus.
He actually just has his government implanted microchip.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
No, that's just in case he gets lost. That's confining.
And just feed him
when they take him to the veterinary.
It's a mental teleprompter. It's a cosmic teleprompter. Mm-hmm. We're just reading the shit off of, reading the shit off the screen.
Oh, it's a cosmic teleprompter.
It's the cosmic teleprompter. That's right. Well, it's kind of fun not to have a preemptive set of beliefs that require explanation or justification, that have no consequence. You stop being an idiot when you see that you have no consequence. That's fucking thrilling. But it's got to be very disturbing. Right? I mean, you get through the day, right, as a creature of consequence. You're always going somewhere. You're always entertaining yourself. You've always got an errand to do.
Yeah.
Even if you sit quietly or do a little stretching.
You're always
right?
on a mission.
You're still a creature of consequence. Mm-hmm. You're still operating. You're still swimming through realms of space-time and deliberateness. And then you time how long you're going to give yourself to do the thing that you're going to do.
Yeah.
And then you kind of know what it is you think you're going to do next.
And you can figure out how it's all going to work and how fast you're going to do this. Yeah. What you're going to encounter.
That's right.
This can blow a big freaking hole in the whole thing.
That's right. This will really disrupt your calendar. Uh-huh. But that doesn't mean you won't be able to keep an appointment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is what we're playing around with. There's so much nuance, you see, that comes to bear on how you take yourself, what you think you are, or what you think you're the product or the consequence of. So you bring this, incredible tapestry of hysteria out for a walk, out for a ride. And then you want to become a spiritual seeker because you're like proudly strutting like, what's his name? Tony after his dance. John Travolta, went strutting at the end of Saturday Night Fever. So you take yourself out for a strut, but you're just a walking assemblage of total hysteria. And you think you're going to go get some Vietnamese noodles and then go to the local yoga center for a little kirtan. And you can. And you will. And you might pride yourself on it, even just a little bit before you fall asleep, after you've convinced yourself to have no thoughts. No thoughts. No thoughts. Just for a little while.
You're obedient to yourself. I'm like, fuck you, no thoughts.
Or maybe you'll get lucky with a sheep. If you're lucky.
Saw some good looking goats today.
That's right. Listen, everything is capable of affection.
Mm-hmm. Blasphemy.
It's true. I know it's such blasphemy.
This must be the most blasphemous.
This is perverse.
Song. The blasphemy song.
Blasphemers, off with your heads. You'll be forced to eat seaweed chips with marmalade.
Ew.
See? It worked. Look how much peeling back you don't have to do, but you might be engaged or entertained to do. How much peeling back it, you could say it's useful to do as you reveal just what a bozo hoax you are. Because it's so easy to get proud or full of oneself. So like in an instant.
Easy. And it comes out of nowhere. You're like,
It totally comes out of nowhere.
I don't want this.
You arise as a, you know, vettable creature out of nowhere.
You see it as soon as it happens, like, oh, for crying out loud.
But see, that's if when we see it to that degree, you've only got two things left to do. Cry all the time. Or repeat over and over again, for crying out loud, for crying out loud. Because you're just hoaxing, forth like, you know, the Niagara River goes down the Canadian side. Ah, nonstop. Ah, you're just hoaxing forth, foaming.
And then
foaming like the falls.
Sometimes you should be, and you're looking for it, it's like, where is it? And it's gone. It's like, oh, fuck, it's gone. Like, there should have been some hoax a while back, and it's like no hoax appeared. I'm like,
that's scary, too. You can get hoax discontinuity.
It was just, like, kind of, like, weird.
Yeah.
Didn't react the way that I would have been for.
Hoaxes interrupt us.
I can't hoax no more. No more.
Really?
No more hoax.
Suffering from hoaxes interruptus. How is it? Not bad. It's pretty good, actually. Yeah. We are a constancy, a streaming constancy of hoax, of implication, having come from a place, going to a place, occupying a place, having appointments and, you know, time frames.
Constancy of extreme variability.
Constancy of extreme variability that can be interpreted any which way it chooses, not according to you. You're not interpreting this. You're not selecting or choosing or deciding or considering how it is you're going to feel about what's appearing or occurring, how you're thinking about the way you feel or feeling about the way that you think. You are cascading absolutely impulsively and impersonally. Whatever shit shows up in your, you know, realm of sentiment is like, excuse me? I feel what? I see what? I think what? This is what? You have no idea, ever. And yet, strutting around with incredible confidence and the gift of choice, the gift of self-determinism. You even know which ascended master you want to be your godfather.
That means feeling guilty is pretty arrogant.
Well, unskillful behavior occurs. You know. Yeah.
This isn't a cure.
Regrettable consequences can appear with you as the victim or the, you know, prognosticator.
In some way, like the tossing back and forth of that in some way seems to be, it's like, if anything, that is what you see. You just see how, you know, it's like, I put a spell on you all the time. You're like, oh,
that's
here's
right.
another spell. Great. I mean, you know. Yeah.
It's still,
it has
David,
nothing to do with what you are. It doesn't matter. It's just spells.
Dave Gilmore with the Fender Stratocaster singing, I put a spell on you. That's right. Yeah. This gets really strange as we agree to contemplate how profound a spell it is, how profound a spell we are, or that we're under. That's a very different conversation than, you know, reciting what you think is the chronology of your day or your life or what it is that's bugging you. Because a thousand things can and will bug you and should. Why not? But if we try to remedy ourselves as the victims of what it is that's bugging us, we will never stop long enough to see that we never began in the first place. Well, thanks for coming out and bringing those ginger lemon cream cookies.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be.
Stay away from those nails on the way home.
Well, I have another flatmate out there. It's one of those little tiny...
Well, if you don't leave a contribution to the church, you're likely to get one. Good night, everyone.